Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. Sorry getting on a little late, but I am in Worcester, Massachusetts. Today I started in Worcester. I jumped on a car, got a ride to train station to Boston, had a meeting there. Then back to the train station, just got to a place where I could hopefully sit down and get a chance to talk to you. I mean, literally walking in the door when the phone was ringing. So we're late on because of me. Okay, this is part two of the show that we did last week, which was very, very well received, so much so that I decided before we even got off the air that we needed to do a part two. So we have some of the same people back this week, Eve Shippens and Dr. Barbara Nevergold, and we're going to try and pick up where we left off last week. Hello, everyone, Barbara and Eve.
Hello.
As I said, I'm sorry that I was a little late, but I have literally been almost everything but a plane today. Okay, we left off last week. And we were given a warning to the rest of the nation in terms of what was happening here in upstate New York, and particularly in Buffalo. We all agree that Buffalo is ground zero for the privatization of public education. The governor, and now some of his hench people on the Board of Education, and et cetera, are making plans and putting things in place to be able to turn Buffalo into an all-charter district like New Orleans, and as I think I said last week, like Rahm Emanuel, and like the governor is trying to do in Detroit. One thing that I didn't say and we didn't mention last week, and that is this notion of the governor's taking control of school districts is not new. As I recall, in Detroit area, the governor of that state did the same thing that Cuomo was able to do just this past spring, got his Republican legislatures to pass a law giving him the authority to take over school districts if they don't meet some type of standard. So that's one thing. Two, why do governors want control? If you think back, the concept of the mayor of a city taking control of public education being an elected school board, an elected, in some states, state superintendent that has autonomy and that they're independent. Autonomy have been the same thing. So back in, I think it was Chicago, perhaps was the first under Mayor Daley, he got the state legislature to give him control of Chicago public school system. We know about Bloomberg in New York City, and there have been several other places across the country where the mayors have gotten control. There is one caveat here. We know about Alex, those of us who are regulars on the show. Within the Alex platform and within what I call the Machiavellian agenda, it is very, very important that the corporate elite deals with only one person, like the mayor, like the governor, like the precedent, and that you don't have to deal with an elected school board. Because when you're dealing with one person, you own that person, and if he owns the school system, that's a perfect storm. So I wanted to throw that in because it has implications for where I think we're going to go today. Now, what we had talked about after the show last week is that I share with both Eve and Dr. Nevergo a document put out by Eli Broad Company or Foundation, I think it was 2006. He basically offered a blueprint of how to close public schools and turn them into charter schools or privatization of schools. And I asked Eve and Dr. Nevergo to take a look at that document and see how closely did Cuomo adopted that manual, that blueprint, for his move to take over the big five school districts. So, with that, let me bring Eve. You've had a chance to look at the document. What do you think of the document itself, first of all?
Well, I noticed that it was very complete, detailed on how to present propaganda to the public so that people would be on the side of closing schools. That was very strong in there. And the other thing that really stood out to me is that this is based on supposed financial decisions, not what is best for kids. And that's very disturbing to me. We have money for so many other things in this country, war and militarization of the police force, but we don't have money to invest in our children. This just doesn't seem right.
Barbara?
Well, I certainly agree with Eve. As I looked at the document, I see elements already that have been introduced in Buffalo, you know, based upon this document or some other document that advances the same strategies. But most definitely, the strategies are there. They're outlined very clearly. They offer, in addition, you know, samples of how to use the strategies to advance the argument, you know, and as Eve said, much of it based on budget, on reducing inefficiencies. I've heard that a lot at the board table. And so this is a very clever toolkit, if you were to help to disenfranchise voters and a public school board. I just want to backtrack for a minute, though, on something said in the intro, and that has to do with the government control or the governor control, and certainly we see our governor moving in that direction. But also, this past year, we had an attempt to make our mayor the controller, the power behind the school district, and that attempt didn't succeed this time, but a local legislator actually introduced a bill to name the Buffalo mayor the head of the schools and to dissolve the school board.
That happened in my hometown, and I almost don't remember my hometown. I've been gone so long, but in Los Angeles, the new mayor was elected, Garcetti. And I don't think he was even in office yet before a group started publishing a justification for mayor control of public education. I mean, the guy, if he had gotten in office, he probably didn't know his way around his own office, like where his toilet was mm-hmm. within his suite. That's how quickly they started to move to give him the power to take over the school board and or dissolve the school board, or the school board would be under his control, which mm-hmm. is kind of the practice, but school board doesn't have any power in this arrangement.
Yeah.
So now, in what I was really fascinated by when I first looked at this document back in 2000 and was 6 or 7 or what have you, and then when Rahm Emanuel started his push to privatized Chicago school, is how these guys blatantly follow this damn manual. I know about Buffalo, and you guys are going to educate me and our public on this, but how they blatantly follow this manual as if no one was ever going to see it when it's made available to the public. It's incredible. Barbara, you being the elected school board member, having been in the education system for a while there, how far can you go back in terms of seeing now the outline of the takeover of public schools, either there in Buffalo or other places in the state?
Well, I will use my recent experience, because certainly the takeover, the movement has probably started and preceded my position on the board, but I think it has ramped up in the last few years, and I've been on the board since January of 2012, and I've certainly seen Buffalo targeted by the state education department on many levels. We can talk more specifically a little bit later, but also within, we have a school board member who was elected in 2013, who made it known and continues to make it known that his goal is to dismantle or disassemble the Buffalo Public Schools. He makes no bones about that. He's very clear, and he is wealthy and well connected, and so he has the ear of politicians, of business people, and religious people, community leaders. Who don't challenge that assertion that he's going to disassemble the schools and replace them with his own version of what the school district should be, and certainly charter schools being a major part of that.
Eve, you've been teaching you lived in Buffalo almost your entire life. You've been teaching, you went to school there. If you now think about it, now that you have more knowledge about it, how far back can you go in terms of saying when the takeover or the privatization movement hit Buffalo?
I've been teaching for just under 15 years, and there was only a handful of charters when I started teaching 15 years ago. There was a gap between when I graduated high school and then I went into teaching later in life, so I could be honest and say I wasn't paying the best attention for a while. But once I started teaching, there was this push to have charter schools. It wasn't as aggressive as it's gotten in the last couple of years, but there has been a constant erosion of funding to the Buffalo Public Schools. There's been, through the School of Choice program, which sounds so nice on the surface, that parents get to choose the school that their child goes to. It's the way it's been implemented, it's completely resegregated our schools. And then that, coupled with the defunding, has really set up so much inequity inside the schools. And then it's been charter schools are seen as a way to get something better for a lot of parents who really are stuck. If they choose to have their kids in the Buffalo Public Schools, they're stuck in the worst schools, in schools that they may consider even to be unsafe. And I think that this has been, it's kind of like turning up the water on a pot or turning up the fire on a pot of boiling water. You don't notice it at first. At first it seems like, there's only a few, it doesn't matter. But over time, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter. And in the last 2-3 years, it's just been a blatant attack that it's happening faster. And overall, the whole school district is really up for grabs, and that's really scary.
How many charter schools do you have? Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that also what has contributed to that, that boiling pot is the fact that within the last 3 years or so that, again, that I've been on the board, we've had six superintendents. The destabilizing of the district, you know, in terms of at least two of those superintendents being undermined to the point that that they had to leave, either resigned or pushed out. And that, again, has left a gaping hole to say to fill and has continued to erode, I think, you know, again, the support for the district. It has allowed these individuals who want to dismantle the district, who want to create more charter schools, to come in and do that, because now we're a district that needs to be saved, saved from ourselves, perhaps. But it really is a, as I said, has been ramped up. And as Keith mentioned, this over the last 2 years, where it's undeniable that we are a district under attack.
We have a caller that's calling from a foreign country. Let's get that person. Hello, yes. Caller.
Hello,
caller. And
hello,
you're calling from where? Where are you calling from?
From Austria.
Austria. That would qualify as a foreign country. And you are? Hello?
I'm fine.
Yes.
I am fine.
Do you have a question?
Hello, caller.
Oh, no, I don't have a question.
And you're calling from where? Where are you calling from?
I told you, from phone store. From phone store, you know.
Would qualify as a country?
Well, if you don't have a question, then we'll get back to our program.
Yes, I have a question. I have a question.
What's your question?
Oh, my question is, what can you say about trauma-based mind control?
I didn't get that. Did anyone hear that question?
No, I didn't understand it.
Okay. Doug, if you're there, okay, all right. Let's get back to where we were. That was kind of interesting, though, if he was calling from Austria. That would be a first. But anyway, back to the show. Okay. Another one of my questions would be, how many charters do you have now? And I'm sure there's a push to increase the number of charters. And what type of resistance is mounting, if any?
Well, I don't know if Eve has the exact number. I don't think I can give you the exact number, perhaps 10 or so. But I can say that last year, when the new board majority, after an election, and we have a 9-member board, and 5 of the members are now pro-charter, when that new majority came in, they immediately looked to create a situation whereby they could give some of our buildings. Again, here we go with the fact that we had excess seats, therefore did not need certain buildings, therefore these buildings are free and available to give to charters. And so they actually pushed to have a request for space process that allowed charters, several charters, there were about three or four that applied, to either co-locate or take over some of the buildings that we have currently. And that was a real fight with the minority members of the board who resisted that, who protested that, and certainly with the community that also supported us and looked at the blatant takeover or attempt to take over buildings without regard for the children who were going to still be in those buildings. So we managed to ultimately find out that our city charter says that the school district doesn't own those buildings, the city does. So if the school gives them up, the district gives them up, we're not going to use them for schools, then they go back to the city, and the city determines what happens to the buildings. So a 6 to 9 month fight over this process ultimately at this point ended in the charters not being allowed to come in and take over buildings or co-locate. But that doesn't mean that there isn't now still ongoing secretly an attempt to find a way to give access to charters in our buildings. And also, there are new applications for new charters.
That's called, at least in my area, it's called co-location. And also in New York, co-location, where charters can come in and occupy half of the building or a floor, and the other kids have to cram into the remaining space. So you said that's happening there.
Well, there's an attempt to have it happen.
I wanted to add that last year when we were looking at this, about 10,000 students are currently in charter schools in Buffalo, and that's out of something like 45,000. So that's about 20%. So that is a large number. And also, these charter schools are still seeking our space. One of the things about receivership in New York State is under the receivership law that Cuomo pushed through with the budget last spring, is that if it goes to the next level where the superintendent is no longer the receiver, where there's an outside receiver, one of the options is to convert to charters. So although we did definitely push back against the charter takeover, it's not something we can stop fighting against because it's part of the receivership law.
We have another caller, but this time from Boston. So let's hope this one goes through smoothly. Hello, caller. Caller?
Hello, sir.
Yes.
Hello?
And you are? Yes. Can you hear us?
Yes, I'm Mike. Yes, sir. I'm Mike from Buffalo.
Okay, Mike. Do you have a question?
Well, I just had a comment.
Okay.
I'm from Buffalo, not Boston.
Okay.
Yes, sir. The individual that's on the board right now, Carl Palladino, the investor, the gentleman that's involved in the charter school movement, sir, he promises to flood the election with massive amount of campaign donations this May. So I would ask people to keep your eyes on elections this May. They're already bragging that they're going to have reform candidates and flood the election with millions of dollars. And they will have the Buffalo News on their side because they are reformers also.
That's what happened the last time, isn't it? You had money coming in supporting the reform campaign.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
No, and I want to thank
already bragging.
I want to thank the caller for making that a point, because we do have an election coming up in May of 2016. 6 seats will be up of the 9 seats, and so there's a tremendous issue facing us with that election, in that we could definitely see the number of people elected who could turn this school district over to charters, to an outside receiver, which is also part of the law, And we have a very serious challenge ahead, and we have to pay attention to making sure we get people running for the district who support public education and are not involved in trying to eliminate it or dissolve it.
Okay, folks, you remember I was in Buffalo for 10 days and may even get back there, maybe not this trip. So I got a chance to really somewhat be embedded in the community. And one of the things that struck me, and not in a nice way, is that Paladino, I think that's his name, who is a I don't know if a billionaire, but he's certainly a multimillionaire, who owns so much real estate in that area, and I guess probably other places in the state, who is buddy-buddy with the mayor, with the governor, who has said that his main job is going to be to turn Buffalo school, public schools into a charter school district. So we know where he's coming from, and you know the people that he's supporting, where they're coming from. But what really struck me is the amount of support that he has in the black community, and particularly among the black ministers, who I understand is a very powerful group. They have sway over their congregation, so that if Paladino wants to run a black candidate who wants to convert public schools into charter schools, he would have a probably good chance at it, because the ministers who have a vested interest, and this is me talking, people, this is not my guess. So I spent 10 days there, and I think I was pretty observant, and I know I asked a lot of questions. So this is me saying this. These ministers who, and I'm going to say the same thing about them that I said about the NAACP, about Obama, and other black organizations who have a vested interest not in the kids, not in saving public schools, but in what they can get out of it if they support or if they give their support to the people who have money. Now, you ladies may not want to comment on that because you live there, but I think I'm damn correct on what I just said. And if that's so, how is this going to play out in this next election?
I think that the most important thing in this next election is actually getting out people to vote, especially in the west side of Buffalo, the east side of Buffalo, and north Buffalo. Paladino's from south Buffalo. He has a lot of money invested there, and he has a lot of support in that community, unfortunately. And I think that it really is going to be a job for all of us who care about public education in Buffalo to really get people out to the polls.
You know, the last election, which was 2014, that is exactly an issue, a problem that we had, and that was getting people out to vote. Certainly, there were many viable candidates, perhaps too many, that helped to weaken the field, but there also was a lack of engagement by the community in getting out and voting. And I say, you know, with respect to the black ministers, NAACP, and others, that I don't know that I agree with you that that Paladino has their support. As much as I feel that there's been a lackadaisical response, there's been people somehow not feeling that they have the power or not trying to exercise the power, but it we have found apathy, perhaps, is another word to use, but in any event. Whatever the reason at this point, it has been a detriment to the education of the children in this district, because the community, to a great extent, has not come out to protest. I appreciate the stalwart individuals who come to board meetings week after week and let their voices be known. And I know who speak up in the community. Courageous people like Eve, and she has a job. She works for the Buffalo School District. So you know, she puts herself on the line to come out and tell the truth and to be very courageous in doing so, but with very little backing, I'd say, from parents and others who also have a vested interest and should be out voicing their concerns. So, I don't know what it takes to wake up a community, but we've had a sleeping community here that's kind of allowed things to roll along. And I certainly think that that's part of the issue.
Back to the How to Shut Down Public Schools document. Now that you've looked at it, can you begin to think what's coming next according to that plan for Buffalo?
I personally recognize, and I was looking through this, as a teacher, as well as a parent and an alumni of the Buffalo Schools, I was looking at some of the ways they discussed how teachers will be handled in this document. Instead of respecting the collective bargaining agreement, they're recommending in this document to have principals be able to supersede that and pick people for the schools based on their choice. And this all sounds so good when we talk about it. I went to school for administration. I'm certified to be a building-level administrator and a district-level administrator. And I have worked with some teachers that I would not want in my building if I was a principal. However, that's a very small percentage of it. And when I think about this, it's one of these things that come across and it sounds so logical. Hey, we want to pick the best teachers for our building. Don't you agree? And everyone's like, yeah, we agree. It sounds logical. But when there's no due process, when you can just choose, then that's a lot of, patronage. I decided that I want to hire my nephew, or I owe Dr. Nevergold a favor, so I'm going to hire her brother-in-law. And those kind of things happen. And also pushing out teachers at the top end of the pay scale is happening all over the country, where school districts can, choose who they're going to keep and who they're going to push out. And so without any checks and balances to that, that's a very dangerous situation that'll eventually get us cheap teachers who are not experienced, or maybe not even professional teachers, like Teach for America people, instead of real experienced professional career educators in our schools.
You know, I think that we already have moved somewhat to another level here because of the receivership law, and because we have the receiver being the superintendent, already engaged in promoting many of the recommendations or the strategies again that were offered in this document. One being, and I think as Eve talked about for teachers, that the receiver is being given the authority to move teachers and to pull in, as he says, the effective teachers. So to move the ineffective teachers, bring in the effective teachers into the receivership schools to improve those schools, even going so far as to deny a teacher request who would like to transfer. If the receiver feels that teacher is an effective teacher, then we're going to keep the teacher there regardless of what they want. So there are elements in receivership and in the powers vested in the receiver that allow him to extend the school day, extend the school year, create situations where there's professional development that's mandated, create situations where there have to be teacher or staff meetings twice a month or every week or what have you. So many of those receivership powers, et cetera, really are now taking to the implementation stage many of the recommendations with respect to the broad report toolkit that we're going to see and that we see trying to be exercised now in Buffalo because our superintendent receiver has been given the authority by the commissioner to move ahead on his plans regardless of whether or not the teachers agree to a memorandum of understanding to capitulate with what it is he wants them to do.
Last week we talked about the Big Five that you guys educated me on that fascinated me, that it's not just New York, it's not just Buffalo, it's three other school districts. Yep, and are four of the three upstate New York?
They actually go straight across the state because we have Buffalo, Rochester is about an hour and a half east of us. Then we have Syracuse that is more towards the Hudson. And then is it Yonkers, Dr. Nevergold?
Yes, it's Yonkers.
Yeah, which is closer to New York City. So it really spans straight across the state.
My question is this. We know what's happening in Buffalo because you guys live there and I spent 10 days there. But what's happening in the other three upstate New York districts? We know what's happening in New York City. How are the other three, to your knowledge, being impacted with this by this plan?
I know that Rochester is the second largest percent of receivership schools in New York State, and they have been fighting schools being closed down. They have been part of the fight about equitable funding. Actually, all of the Big Five have been part of the fight for that equitable funding. And these five school districts are the ones that are the most non-white school districts in New York State as well.
I would say that, you know, with respect to Rochester and Syracuse in particular, and one of the reasons that that I see and that I've written about Buffalo being targeted and Buffalo being the poster child for all kinds of mandates from the commissioner that started any number of years ago when our superintendent, our brand new superintendent in 2012, Dr. Pamela Brown, was hired. The Commissioner King at the time appointed a special distinguished educator who was going to come in and help us to move our priority schools out of priority status. This is a brand new law. It could have been applied to any of those districts. And Rochester and Syracuse, when you look at their performance or proficiencies on ELA and math tests, fall below Buffalo. And yet Buffalo got a distinguished educator mandated to us. Buffalo got a mandate for the first time as a urban district to send students to BOCES. So we had to send students to BOCES. Looking at how the Big Five have fared and how cities within the Big Five who, we look at, again, the accountability status are in worse condition than Buffalo, you have to come back again to wonder why Buffalo has become, the example and the model for which so many of these these strategies to destroy public schools have been exercised right here in Buffalo. You know, we have this fertile ground that's been tilled by our legislators, been tilled by the governor, by the state ed commission, as well as people locally, including the board. So, when you look at the Big Five, Buffalo again stands out for that reason.
Is there any possibility that a lawsuit would be able to, one, turn back the clock by saying that the attempt to take the elected board members out of the equation and put it in the hand to an appointed person, and that the governor is superseding the Constitution by having gotten that power and then having exercised it? Because what I have not heard, and not only just here in, actually here, I'm in Massachusetts now, but not only in upstate New York, is a court challenge. I mean, I know you guys have had discussions about this. Am I right? Have there been discussions? Is there any possible action? And if so, what are the lawyers or whomever saying the most likely outcome would be?
To my knowledge, I have not heard discussions from community groups talking about how to respond to these attacks or to this ongoing attack legally.
I do know that our teacher union has challenged some of it and continues to challenge some of it in court, and that has been going back and forth for almost like over a decade. Different challenges to different things. Because we've been without a contract for 11 years. So there's been a lot that we've taken to court, and it's gone back and forth. And it hasn't really changed any of the real circumstances. Outside of that, I do know that one of the Buffalo Board of Education's lawyer is one of the prominent lawyers in Western New York who also teaches at UB's law school. And I think that there's a real resistance for lawyers to take this on and fight against him. And on the local level, statewide, there's been, I've heard some discussion, but nothing has gone to court as far as I know.
We've got maybe 2 minutes. I'm going to let each of you have about a minute, and then I'm going to take the last 5 minutes and bring people up to date on where I am, what I've learned, and et cetera. Barbara, you want to go? Any last words?
Well, my last words are that I think...
Maybe that was a bad choice of words for me, your last words. No pun intended.
That's why I hesitated. I mean, I think that the real concern at this point, among so many other concerns with respect to where we're going in Buffalo with public education, has to do with receivership. And I think that we very definitely have to pursue strategies to refuse, resist, or receivership, including legal strategies. And I think that we didn't talk about the opt-out movement we just didn't talk about it, but to some extent it appears to be a movement that is localized in suburban districts and not so much in urban districts, which we haven't seen that much here. But I think that that is a very strong movement which does align with what we are doing with respect to protecting public education, and that needs to be more focused in urban districts on looking at that opt-out movement and participating in it.
Well, if that's the case, I would be more than happy to put you in touch with the people who, I should say, manage, run United Opt-Out. And I can do that in a heartbeat. But we have that caller back. Let's bring that caller in. And then maybe, Eve, I'll get back to you,
James?
For 1 minute. Yes.
Can you hear me, James? It's Kathy Cole.
Yes, I can. Hey, Kathy Cole.
How you doing, James? Good.
I'm okay.
Well, I found the program really, really interesting, and I know you don't have much time, so I just wanted to make comment as to why Buffalo, I believe, is being targeted. Now, if you Google Katie Campos, she's no longer the assistant deputy director for public education, but she was at one time, and she is very proactive in Teach for America and charter schools. I actually had met with her in Albany in August of 2012. So a lot of the, I think, groundwork was already laid before we even realized what hit us. And Jeanette Duderman for Long Island Opt Out and Lisa Rudley from NYSCAPE would be willing to get involved in the opt out movement up there. We had 80,000 opt out on the island. New York City has low opt out numbers as well. I believe it's sometimes parents' lack of knowledge of what's going on, and that they have such a high level of respect for the teachers and or the administrators in the school that they really have to get all the facts so they can make the decision to opt out for themselves. And another, okay. If I have a few seconds, am I running out of time?
I'm giving you my minutes. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I think another big issue here is that we need to have an inspector general, not only for every state for the education department, because the funding is massive and it's very difficult for a normal person. You know, the comptroller, he does all these audits, but really nothing comes from them. There's very few criminal prosecution. There's very few referrals to the feds. New York State is the only, New York Education Department is the only branch of New York State government with no inspector general, and you have to ask why, that the attorney general is both the defender and the investigator for the NYSED, total conflict of interest, and I believe we need to go further, and we need to have an inspector general, much like Loretta Lynch, for the feds for the United States, for the United States Department of Education, so that we as educated, voters and parents and teachers and vendors, when we are aware of possible influence by money in public education, have somewhere to go to actually have it legitimately investigated. There is nowhere to bring it now.
Okay. Folks, this is Kathy Coles. She is in New York City. She has a new radio show that she started about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And it's going phenomenally well. And for some reason, she has invited me to be on a show next Thursday. And then the Thursday after that, she's invited me, I'll be in New York City by then, she's invited me to be an in-studio guest for, I think, maybe up to an hour on a show. I don't know why she's doing this. I mean, I don't know.
I'm doing this because I am so... in awe of what you're trying to do, and I don't think that the average person realizes being a vendor for the New York State Education Department and New York City Department of Education for 30 years without incident and uncovering financial malfeasance and endangering of our children and reporting it, I lost my business because of that. I have teachers, I just had three teachers reach out to me today that have been retaliated and lost their jobs for reporting wrongdoing and abuse in the schools. This cannot be tolerated, and people are starting to make noise. And the opt-out movement, I believe, is going to give us even more strength because they have our backs, and there are a lot of educated parents. And if we cannot report financial malfeasance, illegal activities in the school, kids not getting the proper services on their IEP, and feel that we're going to lose our careers over it, then we have a huge problem. And I don't think it's only in New York State. I think it's a national dilemma.
Okay, Kathy. I mean, Eve, I want you to give your I won't say parting words, close up, something, anything.
Okay, I just wanted to say that the most important thing that everyone listening needs to remember, and I hope that we're getting this word out across Buffalo, is that we the people are the ones that truly have the power. Right now we're going against the power of money, and we've learned to submit. If we all stand up at once, we will not be defeated. This needs to play out in our school board elections. This needs to play out in our opt-out movement. I am a teacher and a parent, and my son is opting out for the third year. I promote this, and I do it knowing the risk that I have to my job saying that I believe in opt-out. These tests are biased. It labels my students. It labels the teachers, and it closes down schools. And
also, I think it violates the rights of learning disabled children as well.
It definitely does. And
okay, ladies, I got about 30 seconds or less. Folks, I'm back in Massachusetts. I had a meeting today. I have another meeting tomorrow. I'm heading to Baltimore Wednesday morning, where I get off of a bus and go right to a university, and I'm a guest lecturer. And then I'll spend maybe almost a week there doing what I've been doing for the last 5 or 6 weeks. But then I'm coming to New York City. Kathy has made it possible for me to put New York City back on the itinerary. And so I will be back there, and when I finish with New York, I'm going home. It'll be in about 8 weeks. And so you'll hear me next week from Baltimore, and then the week after that, I'll be in New York City. And I also want to close by saying, folks, you know I have a GoFundMe campaign going on. Where are you? I know where I am, but where are you guys? You haven't been that supportive of it. Either you don't believe in the project or me or whatever it is, but I really am disappointed at this point, because this project is for you as much as it is for anyone else on the planet. So with that, teachers and parents, I would like to see you guys contribute to my GoFundMe campaign. Ladies, thank all three of you, and I will be in touch with you ladies about United Opt Out very, very shortly. And I'll see everyone next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.